For February the 18th, 2022, we talk about Dying Light 2, Death's Door, and Tattletale. Welcome to Level 403. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. I apologize for the late cancellation last week. I'm sick to my stomach most of the time. This was one that ended up going, for most of the day and kept on getting worse until it got time right before recording. I was like, it's not going to be good, so I'm going to call it off. So
no worries.
Wise choice.
You should not have to apologize for prioritizing your health.
Right. And by prioritizing my health, laying in bed with a bucket next to me. Like you do. Yeah.
Prioritizing self-care, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know. There we go. Yeah. So that explains last week, and no more said on that matter. Might as well get started. Like, how are folks doing? Dennis, how you doing?
I'm doing good. It was Valentine's Day yesterday. So we celebrated by chasing our kid around the house who had a nosebleed and was puking up raspberries. So there was lots of red involved. That was fun.
Yeah, it's on theme.
But that's what passes for Valentine's Day at this stage.
Yeah.
about right.
No time for romance, Dr. Jones.
So we missed it. How was your birthday?
Oh yeah, birthday was great. Had a dinner at my in-law's house, and Bob made his famous chili.
Mm.
Which he likes to point out is indeed award-winning chili. So that was, that was by request on my part. And then ate cracker cake, which is a family recipe. Ben, have you ever had cracker cake?
I do not remember. It feels like maybe once, but I can't recall.
Okay. So they joke that like cracker cake is part of the reason that I married into the family. Mm. It's mostly a joke.
They think it's a joke.
Yeah.
It was a good birthday, especially food wise. I would have loved to then cap it all off with a Bengals win. That would have been a nice birthday present, but can't have a
couple of suspect calls and or that guy really shouldn't have grabbed that jersey.
Yeah, it was a hell of a game. It was fun to watch all the way through, and I will take that.
Yeah.
So that was me. I'm now a year older. I cannot mock Jen anymore, as we talked about.
Sad.
I know. It's I'm looking forward to next year already. But it was a good birthday overall.
Nice. David, how's your week? What did I do anything cool?
I'm trying to think. Not anything real. Real particular this time around. Just kind of bobbing, weaving.
As always. Yeah.
Yep.
That's fine. Well, boring is a luxury, and I didn't mean to call you boring. I just.
I'm over it.
No, but boring is a luxury is a thing that I always say. Like, I'll even just say that to my mom. It's just like, oh yeah, nothing's going on. No excitement. I was like, do you really want?
It's sort of the opposite of the whole that Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times.
Yeah, like in my family, like things being exciting usually entails somebody being in the hospital. So you know, if it's a choice between boring and like us taking shifts, like being next to somebody's bed, yes. So that is why I say boring is a luxury.
There's a definite age at which, you learn that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was talking with someone. It's like all these quote unquote, historical, you know, action movies like Braveheart and stuff like that always age the protagonist up by about like 20 years, because what, Wallace was like 13. It's like, yeah, of course I would throw down at 13. I was dumb.
Oh, so I apologize for inadvertently calling you boring. I did not mean it in the mean way that might have been intended. I just want that to be very clear. Ben, how's your week going?
Yeah, what
Ben,
are you gonna
I
call
have
me,
no
Cole?
Yeah. About calling you boring.
My last couple weeks are good. I went to Portland 2 weeks ago. We went to a retro game bar that was really cool.
Which one?
It's like basically there's a bunch of TVs. Each TV had like two or three consoles hooked up to it.
Okay.
And you just sit down and you ask them for a game of that generation if they have it. And then they'll like set it up for you and you can play games with people.
Oh, nice.
So we did like a tour de force of all the old multiplayer games. We did GoldenEye, Smash Brothers, Halo, and Modern Warfare 2.
Okay.
And so that was really fun to like just kind of go through that timeline of multiplayer games and then crush people at 007. Not even close. Not even close.
Just hustling.
I really want to see the pitch for what makes 007 noteworthy. Like,
what do you of a game?
Yeah, like I know. It seems like wasn't I don't know. I feel like that's a game that hasn't aged well.
All right, buckle up. Are we going to make this a 007 podcast?
Yeah.
It was made by like industry outsiders of their first game. I feel like there's a lot of features that are like unique in it. I thought there were a lot of cool things they're trying to do. The multiplayer was thrown in the like last few months of development, which that might be a point in your favor if you're making that argument. But
and to be fair, I'm talking strictly the multiplayer. Like, I definitely the single player was pretty sweet.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, there's like weird like edges, or there's weird like things you need to be to do to be proficient at the multiplayer. Like manual aiming is for suckers. Like anybody who tries to do that, they're wasting their time. You need to rely on like the auto aim. So it's just a matter of when do you trust the auto aim is actually pointing at the person and can fire. There's a weird thing where you need to run diagonally if you want to run faster and use the C pad, because running forward and strafing, but going diagonally in the direction you want to, you move faster than if you're just running there in a straight line. So you can make arguments that there's things that are unpolished about it, but
it was also it shipped on a system that was popular, that also had four controller inputs, and it was a 3D first person shooter when those were relatively rare outside of like oddities
and
like
NPC.
I guess
that's what I'm thinking is like it seems to me like its primary selling point was being the only thing available versus like would it stand up to like Quake Wars or whatever, Quake Arena, whatever.
Probably not, but graded on a curve, and especially like first cut's the deepest, right? Like that was the first game that people probably played of its type, and it made that first impression. Like you would have had to have a pretty good computer to play multiplayer Doom or Quake. Roughly around that time,
first person shooters.
I mean, kinda, but it's like, what is it? Taco Bell's the best Mexican food you have until you have Mexican food, right? So it was great. It was graded on a curve. And also, we shouldn't be talking about video games right now. So
wait, why? Well, why not?
No, in the intro, we usually don't talk about video games.
We got banter, guys. Come on.
I guess, well, this is something I did, I guess, but I suppose it is very much stepping on things I've been playing. But
was 007 the first game to have like big head mode?
I can't. I think NBA, NBA Jam had a big head mode.
Okay. I mean, technically it's DK mode, so probably Donkey Kong was the first game with that mode.
Interesting. Have it be meaningful to play, I guess.
technically if we're going real out there, Mardi Gras
RLDK mode.
I don't know why. Sorry, I stumbled down the Wikipedia hole to find out like what was the meaning of the word like carnival-esque.
Okay.
Okay.
And it's like referencing basically big head mode in Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
So all right. I have one last tidbit to talk about, and I swear I'll be done with those types of things.
Okay.
I was playing 2-on-2 Halo Capture the Flag, and much to my shame, at one point I took my partner's controller because they were driving the Warthog, but they did not know how to drive the Warthog.
Oh no!
So that we could get back to the base and score the point. And that was. So I don't know what that says about me.
So
but,
did they willingly hand it over, or was this a took?
It was semi willing, but you could tell if feelings may have been hurt.
Okay, so. That's one of those things where if it's like no harm, no foul. But if they were, I could see feeling bummed out about that.
I want the story to be that you took the controller and then still died.
So no, we won, but at what cost?
Oh
man.
Oh, that's cool. I have not heard of or been to that bar, based on the description. Anyway,
I will look up the name and DM you it.
Yeah. I haven't had too much going on. I went to the Henry Ford Museum yesterday.
Okay.
With my brother, we went up to Detroit just on a day trip, because we wanted to see the Dymaxion house that they have there, the crazy like mid-century proto-futuristic mass manufactured house that Buckminster Fuller invented, and it never took off because it's like
a Resident Evil house.
No, it's almost like a cross between an Airstream camper and a house.
It feels like every couple of years there's a big article think piece on like modular housing is the next big thing.
Yeah.
It's like tiny homes back before they're cool.
Yeah, I mean tiny homes are just campers for yuppies or trailers for yuppies. But no, I'll send you a picture of that. I mean, it's super cool. It's like a space age thing, and I'm fascinated by Buckminster Fuller, out there inventor who made a bunch of cool stuff. We went there and it was cool to see it, but we couldn't go inside. Because of COVID restrictions, you would have been two on top of each other. Because the inside, it's only 1,000 or so square feet, which is kind of crazy for how compact it looks from the outside. So we couldn't go inside, and that was a bummer. But it was a neat experience overall. I had never been there before, which is weird because it's a major museum, relatively near where I grew up. It was fun. Got to see lots of cool cars and like industrial inventions and gigantic like steam engines, stuff like that.
How's the people watching?
It was mostly just like small families. It was one of those things where like it wasn't crowded. I mean, the building is so gigantic that it would be impossible for it to be crowded.
Sure.
But it was sparsely attended, but not so sparsely attended that it felt depressing,
mm-hmm. Comfortable.
Yeah. So mostly we just saw like families and stuff, small kids.
There were no Henry Ford cosplayers or anything.
No. It was all regular folk. Nobody doing anything, with a lot of pageantry like that.
Anybody protesting by the US-Canada border there?
So we intended to go over to the Ambassador Bridge. Honestly, we did to swing over there to take a look at the truck convoy, mostly just to gawk. But by the time we got up there, like they had just broken up the convoy, the blockade that was there the previous day. So there would have been nothing to see.
Fair.
So we did take that into account. It would have been like a 20 minute drive in the other direction to get over to the Windsor border, but nothing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Got to see the bus that Rosa Parks did the initial demonstration on.
Sweet. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So
it's so funny because you realize like the at the time I can't imagine, you know, who had the wisdom to be like, wait, all right, make sure you remember the bus number. Like, I don't know if it went into public record in some way, shape, or form, but that's
it probably got put into the press because of the route that it was on, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I don't know. That was cool. It's the first time I've been out to, like, a big place in a very long time, and it was fun.
Yeah.
Cool.
It was
very mentally freeing to be able to do that, especially after vaccinated and stuff like that.
Yes. Yeah. So, I think we got to talk about some video games, because I know we got some build up here. We got some video.
Change the segment first, though. God forbid.
It's the distinction is usually so subtle, and I usually guide us very gently, but we got so far down that path that it's fine. You went to a cool bar and you had a good time. I think the guilt is on all of us. I think we all let that happen.
I
apologize for nothing.
I take no blame.
David was simply bobbing and weaving. Yes. He cannot be held accountable for this.
So I think we ought to do the regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the young boss, and we can get started with
The Grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. David, I don't think you were here last time. I think Jala was here last time, if I remember correctly, so I'm going to have you go first.
Yeah, so I've got a couple of things. Real quick hit, Idle Champions, which is the, you know, Forgotten Realms idler game, I unlocked, I think, my favorite character, which is simply three kobolds in a trench coat.
You mentioned that last time you were on, yeah.
Oh, did I mention that? Okay, so maybe that's old news, but yeah.
No, this is a different three kobolds in a trench coat.
Yeah, they're all over the place, man.
If you know what to look for.
So, so that's continued to be fun. It's really weird the degree to which they really lean into the tie-in, like, streaming games they sponsor to create a sense of community, which is kind of fun, but also kind of weird because it's a game with almost no gameplay.
Right.
But yeah, whatever. You know.
So how much money have you spent on this game at this point?
$5.
Oh, wow.
That's reasonable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that for like a starter pack kind of thing? Like some, like just currency to get you started going
yeah,
faster?
So yeah. So I unlocked Tasha's Cauldron, which is this adorable little cauldron with eyes and wings. that's one. Basically, familiars in this game can click for you. So like if you're going to go away from your desk, you can like set a familiar on like the level up button. It'll just click every 5 seconds.
Wow.
So yeah.
Yeah. And that's like something from Cookie Clicker. You can invest in, little hand clicky cursors that'll go once every 5 seconds.
Exactly. Yeah. So, other than that, in more interesting news, I picked up, by which I mean download from Game Pass, Infernax.
Okay. I feel like I saw this and it looked cool. Tell me about it.
So it's the gameplay is basically, was it Zelda 2, the weird side-scrolling Zelda game?
You mean the very good side-scrolling Zelda game?
Yes, exactly. So it's, that sort of thing, big emphasis on, you have a shield that can block attacks, but only either high or low. So you have to, crouch or not crouch at the right moment.
I love that about Zelda, too. You're making this sound real good to me.
The other thing is the plot line is you're a crusader, a duke, I guess, who's, come back from the Crusades to his duchy to find that it has been overrun by berserk-style monsters.
Okay.
So, you know, just big time body horror, you know, monsters. And, you know, you have to go around, you know, fighting said monsters. It's a big thing. I've got to be honest, I never made any progress in Zelda 2. I was too young to understand, like, the weird meta progressions and stuff like that.
Yeah, the, like, dying wasn't strictly a reset, that kind of deal.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I don't know to what degree some of the things I'm going to say are like, oh, yeah, that's just, like, a feature of the genre.
Mm-hmm.
But it uses a kind of Dark Souls-style death mechanic where, you know, when you die, you go back to the last save point and, you know, lose all your progress from there.
Mm-hmm.
However, the weird exception to that is slowly over the course of the game, you unlock extra lives. So now, like, each, you know, every time I go to, it's an altar in the game, but effectively a bonfire.
Mm-hmm.
I basically get 2 lives, and so if I die, I'll just, you know, respawn on that screen.
Okay.
The other big thing is there's a lot of, there's kind of some Metroidvania-y type mechanics where, you know, you have to unlock, you know, abilities to break through certain walls or the ability to, you know, do a extra jump, things like that, to get to different locations.
That was present in Zelda 2. Like, you had to find, you know, the candle and the torch to, like, light up the pathway to, I think, the second temple or something like that. Maybe the first.
Exactly. Yeah. The other kind of interesting thing, though, is there's a moral choice system in the game that, you know, is one kind of lets you lean more into the, if you want to, kind of the Berserk style, you know, amorality.
Okay.
You know, for example, the first enemy, the first real boss enemy you find is some peasant who, like, you know, begs you to kill him, and then, you know, when you don't, you know, turns into some, you know, horrible, you know, body horror monster.
Oh,
but you can simply cave his skull in, like,
when he's still the human, just like, I trust you that you know you're going to turn. So, yeah,
right. And, you know, fitting with the kind of a bit of the theming, this is, like, the first thing you see. So, like, at that point, you have no reason to believe that this is a thing.
Yeah.
What would you guys do if someone walked up and was like, please, I need you to kill me?
I would want more information.
Yeah.
I'm about to turn into a horrible body horror monster. You need to kill me now.
Honestly, in Seattle, I would just keep walking.
Yeah.
I mean, stuff like that.
Well, happens. Also, like, I mean, if it was in Seattle, there would be, I don't know, police, a justice system. Like, trust
presumably,
me. Yeah. I mean, presumably, of course. But I don't know. I wouldn't want to trust that whoever saw me, whoever responded to the scene, would believe me, let's say.
I wouldn't trust anyone who looked at me and said, yeah, that's the guy to take me out in a high pressure situation.
He looks like he's gonna finish this in one.
Right. So the other thing, though, is these, you know, choices you make have some fairly significant side effects. So this is going to be somewhat spoilery, but just to, you know, kind of give an example, there's basically 5 temples and then presumably the final temple because you're, you know, breaking the seals on this, you know, ultimate evil temple.
Okay.
And, let's see, shortly after I beat the second temple, you know, I got to a town and, like, went into someone's house, and this woman runs up and it's like, oh, yeah, that, you know, that guy that, like, begged you to kill him, that was my husband, and I saw that you didn't just kill him, So I trust you to like give you this important quest.
Hmm. Oh, so weird.
Like it
you let my husband suffer. Definitely
does have, you know, impact on the game, which is interesting.
Well, that's good.
On the other hand, I'm doing a you know, kind of the good playthrough. However, I know you can simply like slaughter everyone.
Right.
One of the early spells you get is basically summons a lightning storm that takes out all the enemies on the screen. Okay. And you can just cast in the middle of town if you want to.
Oh no.
Oh. Wow.
So
how do you know this?
You know, that one's actually in the trailer, but
the game has a great save state.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, so you know, really good game, really good art style, you know, seems to have a pretty good, you know, theming, you know, good, handle on, you know, definitely having good versus evil, but not too good.
Okay. Yeah. It's not, save the puppies or drown the puppies.
Yeah. Like, there's one instance where you know, some peasants you know, capture a demon and have it in a cave in a cage, and like the maybe good choice is just to like burn it alive.
Ooh.
Hey, demons like, would like that though, right? I feel like burning is an inefficient way to get rid of demons.
Yeah. That actually comes up because then like you stand there and like a couple minutes pass and like all the townsfolk leave, and you know, a couple moments pass, and your character's like, "Man, how long is this gonna take?"
You guys start talking about the weather and stuff.
Yeah, you know,
it's kind of hot. Well, okay, Captain Obvious.
Talk about the weather. What is this? The beginning of a podcast?
But yeah, highly recommend it. You know, very, very solid indie game. The price is right if you have Game Pass.
Yeah. Well, you've already paid for it if you have Game Pass. Yes.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
On the other side of things, I'm continuing my abusive relationship with Techland Games.
Oh, you picked up Dying Light 2.
Yes. Yes, I have. Which is a interesting experience.
Mm-hmm.
The gameplay was always really good. It's probably better now. You
what
know,
is the gameplay like?
Sorry, it's a combination of a first person parkour game. And then a pretty meaty hack and slash.
Okay.
One of the big things that was somewhat in the game previously, but is really emphasized this time around, is what they call like parkour combat. So
please, parkour combat,
exactly. As opposed to when you do, you know, parkour with fine cheese, which is parcheesy.
Or when you do it on Nick at Night, and then it's parkour Lewis can't lose.
Guys, I haven't thought of a joke. You gotta let me know when all three joke first.
But think of a joke.
Yeah.
So for example, if you perfect parry an enemy, you can then like kind of jump off of them Ong Bak style and do like a flying kick at another enemy, and you are highly encouraged to build a lot of your combat strategy around like kicking people off of roofs or into, you know, spikes or, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of fun. Likewise, it seems like the previous games, all of their previous games, the storylines were basically awful.
Yeah, Dead Island, Dying Light. I remember you saying just like it just eventually got insultingly bad.
Right. Mm-hmm. This time around, they definitely, you know, put a lot of effort into it. you know, a lot, you know, there's a lot more dialogue, a lot more, you know, interesting scenarios. Kind of the storyline is that it takes place, I think, 15 years after the first game. And basically, humanity created a vaccine for the zombie virus. And then
people refused to take it.
Well, a government organization kept experimenting on it and to create a super zombie virus.
Cool. Yeah, that's yeah.
And so, you know, it predictably got out and society collapsed. And the two real interesting things with the settings are, one, you know, the point at which the collapse of society kind of stopped was the Middle Ages. So there's this weird mashup of, like, Middle Ages with Fallout-style, like, salvage tech.
Okay.
Which is, you know, really, really interesting.
Wait. So when society collapses, it just goes, like, backwards in time is, like, the premise of this game?
Yes, exactly. Okay.
All right.
So, not exactly, but, like, one of the main factions is basically, you know, holed up in an old cathedral and, you know, kind of has established a, you know, semi, you know, religious, you know, theocratic-based culture. You know, when you first get there, since you're an outsider, they want to, you know, hang you witch style.
Okay.
Stuff like that. So, you know, it's very much, you know, kind of that sort of thing.
Guys, we need to get Deb off the welcome committee. This is not going well.
The other thing that's kind of interesting with the plot line is basically in this world, virtually everyone is already infected with the zombie virus.
Yeah, they However, do it like Walking Dead. Yeah.
But the zombies in this, with the, you know, the whole hook, particularly on the first game, was the day-night cycle, where the zombies are sensitive to UV light. So, you know, during the day, the regular zombies are just, you know, super lethargic and then become kind of more the fast zombies at night. And any of the special infected, you know, basically are kind of like vampires. They actually can't come out at night, or rather can't come out during the day.
Okay.
More or less.
Yeah.
And so with this, it's basically everyone's infected, but the you won't turn as long as you, you know, are exposed to UV light fairly regularly.
Okay.
So the result of that is anytime you go out at night, or if you're, you know, like exploring an underground facility or something like that, you basically have a timer that's going on where you have to either, you know, leave before it ends up, or, you know, find some place where someone has set up, you know, some UV, you know, lamps or something like that.
They called me a fool for investing in that tanning salon.
That was on a rooftop.
So with that, you know, they've got a really interesting system where a bunch of the, you know, most of the more kind of dungeon-oriented type activities, you more or less have to do at night, because during the day, all the it's full of zombies that are hiding from the sunlight.
So like too many people to handle.
Right, exactly. So
reason you go to Walmart on off hours.
Right, exactly.
Because it's less busy.
Because of the zombies.
It won't take as long. Yeah,
it's not as detrimental to your mental health.
Yeah.
Less likely to see your neighbor there.
Yeah, true.
Exactly. I mean, your neighbors aren't zombies?
Can't be sure. I never really see them. And they never really see me.
I only go into their apartment at night, and they're not around. So
yeah.
What's a Turing test for zombie?
Do they like head cheese?
I mean, I feel like if I was pretending to be a zombie, I would stop short of eating someone else's brain.
I'm just, all I can think of is because you mentioned only going to, into the apartment at night, I thought about just walking up to somebody and just, you know, getting into a conversation and say, you're a real deep sleeper. And then trying to move on. Sorry. I just had that scene. So anyway.
So the biggest downside, though, which gets into the whole like abusive relationship side of this thing, is that they, you know, really emphasize there's two factions in the game, and just in general, you know, that you have to decide who you're going to ally with, and just in general, a lot of the missions have some sort of moral choice element.
Okay.
Which overall is like fairly well done and, you know, are often, you know, legitimately difficult choices and, you know, a kind of set up to be more the Witcher sort of choices and less the Infamous sort of choices.
Okay.
The problem is kind of twofold. One, they basically, the big problem with Techland's game storylines is that they're really into making them edgy and grimdark, but aren't good at earning that.
I mean, they kind of burst onto the scene almost literally with the trailer for the original Dead Island with that little girl bursting through the window. Like they'd started with boom, zombie kid. Right.
Right. Exactly. And yeah, so that, and the way that manifests is it comes across as very intentional. I don't know. It could just be they suck at design, but a lot of times when you make the choices, there's, you know, very negative consequences that both you could, you know, don't really feel earned. You couldn't really have in any way, you know, predicted and, you know, avoided that consequence.
It's like an Army of Two situation.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then also they tend to subvert you know, what the player was clearly you know, trying to accomplish.
Oh, that sucks.
So for example, and again this is kind of spoiler, so whatever, but like the first real big faction choice, you basically the two factions, one are kind of the survivors that are sort of the more democratic but also more like kind of creepy theocratic.
Okay.
Whereas the other faction are basically kind of fascist but are also the ones that are kind of doing most of the legwork to like keep people safe from the zombies.
Okay.
And basically the fascist faction, you know, wants you to betray the survivor faction. And if you choose not to betray the survivors, you know, things basically play out so that it looks like you tried to betray them. And so you end up in a boss fight where you have to kill one of the survivor characters. And so it's like, by, you know, as a player expressing, I want to avoid killing these characters, you know, having the end result be killing these characters.
Yeah.
Like,
unsatisfying. You know,
It's like from a strictly, yes, like, particularly in a, you know, world where everything's falling apart, like, yes, there's obviously going to be, you know, negative unintended consequences, but in a game, making those consequences something that explicitly subvert what the player was trying to accomplish just isn't good design.
Yeah. It takes away agency.
Right, exactly.
And it feels railroady.
As you said, it seems like bad design. Like, they want to surprise the player, but they're not doing it.
Yeah.
Right. Which is too bad, because, like, legitimately, there are a lot of, you know, really well, written characters that have, you know, legitimate motivations and, stuff like that. Like, there is good stuff in there. It's just, I don't know if it's lack of confidence in it or what.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's a bummer.
But are you playing this multiplayer with other people online?
No, I'm just playing it single player. Okay, so.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Good things and bad things. But, you know, that's the Techland game.
I liked how they, when they were advertising this game online, they were advertising it as, like, the sequel to one of the best games ever made. And it's like, I don't think that's true. Like, I haven't heard that many people talk about it.
Right there.
Yeah.
So I think there was a weird thing where Dying Light 2 had a very long support window. You know, they made a ton of DLCs and, you know, free expansions and things like that for it.
You mean Dying Light 1?
Dying Light 1, yeah. Sorry. And so I think, one, like, it did have some good parts to it, and then also, you know, it was something where the supported version eventually was good. One of my favorite parts of it was they eventually added these basically isolated kind of instance, in effect, like, dungeons style levels, and really leaned into, in these self-contained areas, having survival horror elements.
Okay.
So, you know, like, scripted events that would kind of jump scare you and things like that. And so, like, there were good things about it. It's just, just the story that was bad.
Yeah. Well,
so, yeah.
I'm curious to see how it continues. Like, the mechanical stuff sounds real cool. I mean, the fact that they're working the movement into the combat like that. And
the mechanics is excellent, and, you know, feels very good.
Yeah. No, and just that it seems that they're kind of making that pull together is, you know, that's a difficult thing to do. So
yeah,
it's sad. Yeah. Sad to hear that sad's the wrong word. It is, frustrating.
Tragic.
Yeah, it is the worst thing that's ever happened, that they seem to be a little bit railroady with the plot.
The worst thing that's ever happened to the best game ever.
Yeah, the sequel to the... Oh, yeah.
So, other than that, just been playing Extraction, which I feel like probably we'll talk some about when Des is gone.
Okay.
That sounds like a segue.
That sounds exactly like a segue. So, Dennis.
Yeah, I have continued to play the hell out of Rainbow Six Extraction, which I assume is what David was referencing.
Yes.
That
or Surgeon Simulator.
Yeah.
You got to extract that pancreas somehow.
A different kind of extraction, but true. This game continues to just be real, real good and real, real difficult. It's got an interesting quirk where, you know, anything can be played solo or co-op. Solo mode is actually the more generous mode. Obviously, if you get downed, there's no way to come back. Unless you bring a specific item. Whereas in co-op mode, if you go down, a friend can pick you up out of down, but not out. So solo mode is way more generous with, like, ammo and health, and there's less enemies. And so I can play in a higher difficulty in solo mode than I can playing with friends, which leads to me kind of, you know, I play a lot on my own just because I can. And then I'll join up with someone and be like, yeah, well, let's, you know, I've been playing on difficulty two or three. And then we just get our asses handed to us.
Mm.
The, you know, with even one extra player, it feels like levels are just, swarming with enemies and swarming with, you know, the more dangerous enemies. And it's a much more chaotic experience. It's much easier to stay stealthy solo as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, you know, this game supports both, you know, going loud and going stealthy pretty well. But the two are very different competencies.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is a very different game with multiple players versus with one. And that's not a bad thing. But you definitely kind of play differently when you've got a teammate.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I guess that is the indication of a good multiplayer game, is that, hey, having other people there actually does impact the gameplay versus just kind of doing what you would be doing anyway side by side.
Yeah, it'd be nice if there was more, if it was more responsive, or if it was a little bit gentler with the way that it stair stepped up with each new player.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a tuning problem. Like that, like the fact that it got so much harder would make me think twice about getting a third in, you know.
I would agree with that. I haven't noticed the jump between two and three be nearly as drastic as the jump between one and two.
Okay.
So has this has it mattered whether this is pickup games or team games? Or,
you know, I do not play pickup games. I will not do random in this mode because communication is too important.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is the thing I will say, is that, you know, pickup games, I've had a couple of excellent ones, but overall, pickup games are a complete shit show.
Yeah. On the opposite side, though, if you're playing with someone who kind of you can trust to play careful, to communicate well, it is one of the best games I've played for rewarding good team communication. Just like, you know, where are the enemies? What room have I cleared? You know, what equipment are you bringing? Even as you're building your loadouts, like, it's just really good on that front. And so I appreciate that. Each character, I think I might've talked about this a little bit last time, but each character kind of levels up individually as they get experience. And obviously, you know, more experienced characters move faster, reload faster, have additional equipment slots, and so kind of are more viable at more difficult levels. But the just one more aspect of like getting every character to level 10 is completely addicting. And it's like, you know, every time I think, well, you know, I could be done, or I could do one mission with so-and-so and get them to the next level, and they get a, you know, their main ability upgrades or something.
Yeah.
And then it's, and you know, they're the missions are segmented into three parts. So I'll just do the first part. I'll get the upgrade. And then the first part goes really well. And it's like, well, it'd be a shame to waste this momentum.
Oh, the myth of momentum. Oh no. Yes. The second you start invoking momentum, you are lying to yourself.
Yes. but yeah, I like this game a lot, and I'm having a really good time with it. All right, David, you can talk a bit about your experience, because it sounds like you've done pub matches more than I have. Yeah. Are there any characters that you've gravitated towards as well?
Probably my favorite, partially just because it's a very straightforward game. Character is Rook, mm-hmm. who is basically a heavy armored character whose ability is supplying his teammates with better armor.
Mm-hmm. It's like, and I want my special ability to be used once at the beginning of the round and then never again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And also, you know, the character is pretty balanced. It's a heavy, you know, heavy armor character, but not painfully slow.
Okay.
And likewise, one of the more unusual things, in my opinion, is the weapons you unlock are character specific and don't follow an explicit, like, you know, it's not like first one is assault rifle, then shotgun, whatever, or even that like every character even necessarily gets a shotgun.
Yeah, like, you know, most characters will get a shotgun, but not all. Most characters will have good silenced options available. And like, everyone's got a silenced assault rifle. Right. And honestly, I have not, like, there's been no moment where unless I'm making the decision, do I want a shotgun or an assault rifle, I've felt like the differences in weapons have been meaningful.
Mm-hmm. So what I found the shotgun versus assault rifle, I can definitely tell. And I strongly prefer three-round bursts to full auto, and some of the assault rifles don't support burst fire.
Hmm. Okay, yeah, I can see
that. The thing for Rook that I really like that is somewhat more uncommon is he has a designated marksman rifle, so like a kind of a pseudo sniper rifle.
Okay, yeah. The sight lines in this game are generally pretty short.
Yeah.
So you have to be very careful how you're going to use that, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, being you know, not a full sniper rifle, it's very much, you know, it's semi-automatic, that sort of thing, so you can take something down quickly, but you also have a lot more ability to, like, reach across the map and, you know, headshot someone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It is focused on not letting things go to shit versus being good when things go to shit.
Exactly. So yeah, so that's been probably my favorite. There's a couple that seem completely worthless. Like Sledge, whose special ability is having a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a number of characters that I feel like don't make quite as much sense with the transition to the not exactly Horde gameplay, but kind of Horde gameplay. Mm-hmm. You know, he's one of them because, you know, busting in on a group of human players in the kind of, you know, offense versus defense mode, you know, makes a lot of sense. It makes less sense with enemies that have more of a traditional, like, stealth game way of understanding stealth.
Yeah, you're almost always going to want to be sealing stuff up, so someone with a sledgehammer to open stuff up is not nearly as useful as it is in other types of games.
Yeah.
Right. And similarly, there's a character whose ability is basically any of the walls that are destructible, he can, you know, place this special, like, bomb on it that, in effect, like, ejects a cluster bomb on the other side.
Okay.
And it's so, like, I want this room to be empty.
Right. And it's extremely effective. Like, it will take out a big room. The problem is just, unless you are playing in a group that is explicitly working together to facilitate that strategy, you know, because it's not the Siege gameplay where you, you know, need to take out a small number of players once, mm-hmm. It just doesn't work that well.
Yeah, I can see that. I've used him for decontamination missions where you need to take out a large number of nests very quickly.
Sure, I can see that. Yeah.
But it's hit or miss. Like, if you can find a wall that's well positioned, it's a one button win the mission kind of deal. If the nests happen to be positioned where you can't really get a cluster grenade to hit them, or at least a significant portion of them, then it's kind of worthless. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Some of them do feel less well thought out than others, more specific.
Yeah, I think the most interesting or kind of funny part of picker groups for me is, you know, it tries to you know, match you based on, like, geographic distance.
Okay.
And, you know, I live in Huntsville, Alabama. Which the thing is, everyone in Huntsville is a transplant. You know, is there for you know, government contracting.
Okay.
And so almost no one has a Southern accent. However, everyone around Huntsville definitely does.
Oh, so okay.
It's very funny, just like all of a sudden, like realizing, oh yeah, I'm in the middle of the deep South, like.
Yeah.
You know, most people I'm getting matched up with, you know, have very much of the southern twang.
Yeah. Which
is, all is real.
Yeah.
Which, you know, hasn't been anything where that's, you know, inhibited communication or anything like that. It's just not funny.
Yeah.
They still speak English. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
It's, as long as you're not saying anything terrible, that's, you know, that's good. No, it's,
right. Anything terrible, had, like y'all.
Oh, heaven
that's
for
That's inclusive
fans.
For genders.
Yeah. No, y'all's actually a really good word. yeah. No, I didn't. I didn't mean for us to get tangled up in that. That's just funny. I like triangulating the draw.
Yeah. Yeah. So the let's see. Other, I don't know. I'd be interested to hear. I've very much come all the way around to. I really like the mode where there's basically one super powered enemy. You have to piss it off. Get it to chase you to the exit and then spring a trap on it.
Okay.
And like initially I disliked it because it's kind of against a lot of the spirit of the game to like purposely be unstealthy and like that sort of thing. But I came to like it just because it's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'd be interested, Dennis, have there been any modes that you've particularly come to like? Or dislike?
I've done a flip on a mode called triangulation, but it's dependent on how many people I'm playing with. And this time it goes in the opposite direction of difficulty, because the mode, there's like three stations around the map, and you have to activate them in order in a very short period of time, which means if you're playing solo, you kind of have to painstakingly clear the route between them because you're going to be sprinting it once things are real. If you have three players, though, you just each go to a button. Everyone hits the button within a second of each other, and you're done. It's the easiest thing in the world. So, yeah. Triangulation is very fun with three players, and you can get through it very quickly. There's definitely mission types that reward kind of rushing through, and there's mission types that reward going slowly.
And I know, in particular, triangulation is probably the mode that justifies Sledge, because yep. It's like, you know, walls are just suggestions, motherfucker.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Let's see, nest tracking is like, I'm thinking in terms of what's easy XP. Like if I see a nest tracking mission, I know it's going to be a good time, because you just got to sneaky and then get out of there. But yeah, there's no mode that I absolutely loathe, that I, you know, am hate seeing on a list.
Have you done singularity mode yet?
Oh, gateway.
Yeah.
Yes, I've done it twice. Essentially the boss fight, and lost both times. The first time I didn't know what I was getting into, and I got overwhelmed. The second time I came in like with really strong grenades with a ton of ammo. I knew I just wanted to, you know, you're going to have to go loud because it's a boss fight. And at about 25% health, the enemy just stopped taking damage.
Mm.
And they would only take I couldn't figure it. It was almost like a puzzle, right? Like I'm trying to figure out like what's going wrong. Am I supposed to do something differently? And as far as I could tell, they only took damage when they were in the middle of attacking. The problem was, so every time you fight a boss, it's like taking inspiration from one of the teammates. And I had the one that was based off of, you guessed it, Sledge. And so when they're in the middle of attacking, you need to be running the opposite direction, not firing your weapon, because the one thing that will kill you fast is them being in close proximity. And so it got to a point that they wore me down. And I couldn't finish it out. But yeah, those are extremely tough.
Yeah.
Yep. I do have to say, Extraction is such a dumb name. Like, I'm interested to know what, like, what the history of that was.
Because it was the backup name. I think it was Quarantine.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so they had to backpedal out of that real quick. So as forgettable as Extraction is, it is not overtly as bad as it could have been.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm playing that game a lot right now. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Are you getting into at all any of the lore, right? You know, reading through the character backstories or any of that stuff?
No, not to any depth.
No. At least the characters tend to be fairly entertaining. A lot of the rest of the stuff is just kind of techno babble, but the characters are pretty good.
Yeah, they do a good job making it feel like a varied roster, which is the whole, you know, that's the origin of Rainbow Six is, oh, we're going to get people from a bunch of different countries together. So that's cool.
Yep.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's Rainbow Six Extraction.
Cool.
I got a couple others. This has been a good week or good 2 weeks for new games for me. I'm going to hit the biggest one first because I probably have the least to say about it.
Okay.
That's probably the one that I want to talk about.
Part that one. I am playing Lost Ark. Did you guess right, Ben?
Nope, never mind. I don't care.
I'll be back later.
Sorry, yeah. This is a knee-jerk reaction from seeing like a bunch of Twitch playing it and like probably artificially since it's owned by Amazon.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all. This is an Amazon foray into it. They kind of bought and imported a game that was popular in South Korea. So, you know, take that for what you will. It is a very competent Diablo-like.
Okay.
And I have yet to out and out die, but I have been in plenty of situations where I've kind of had those, oh shit, gotta back out and heal kind of moments. So for me, that is the right level of challenge. I want to wade through hordes of enemies. I want to, you know, have it be challenging on occasion, but right now it's just grinding through the main quest as fast as possible so I can get into the end game dungeons with my friends.
Right.
The classes are all completely over the top, so it is essentially like the Devil May Cry ethos behind everything. Mm-hmm. For reference, I am playing a gun lancer, which has a lance that is a gun.
That sounds sweet.
That tracks, and no questions.
Yes.
I mean, have you played Monster Hunter? That sounds very Monster Hunter.
Yeah, no, I think these guys would be right at home in Monster Hunter. There's some weird gender gating with classes. Like a lot of the mage stealthy people are girls and a lot of the bruiser types are boys, and that's locked to gender, which feels like a holdover from this game that, you know, being existing for a while in a market that's more accepting of that, fine. But I guess if Amazon's gonna own it, I would see them maybe taking action on that. Like, it doesn't seem...
if you own it, you answer for it.
Right. So I just, you know, at the end of the day, it, you know, it's outdated and I wish they would have done better. It's not gratuitous in my experience so far.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a quirk that makes it feel like it's from an older time.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you like Diablo, this would be perfect for you, and a lot of people are playing it now, so you won't want for seeing others roaming around in the world and fighting the same monsters you are. That's actually something they do really well, is there is no you know, leashing enemies like there is in World of Warcraft, where like if you're not the first one to hit an enemy out in the world, you can't get credit for it. Mm-hmm. Anyone who does any damage to an enemy gets full credit for it.
Okay.
Which is very nice, especially when you're in these world quests that it's like kill X number of Y.
Oh, that's good.
You know, being around other people is not a detriment,
yeah,
which it shouldn't be in a multiplayer game.
It gets rid of ninjing.
Yeah. And, you know, when there's a group of three or four people all waiting for the same boss to spawn, it doesn't have that aggravation, tension, whatever, that WoW Classic kind of had.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, I'm kind of not happy you're here. But also, the game is based around you being here, so.
Yeah.
So, we're going to have that.
Yeah. Lost Ark, like I said, not a ton to say about it beyond that. I think the next report will probably be when I'm at end game stuff, if I stick with it. Next one that maybe is the one Ben was thinking of, I've started playing The Last of Us Part 2.
Hell yeah. Okay.
There it is. Okay, there. I figured that was the one you'd be excited for. Man, the reports of this being a real gut punch of a game were not wrong.
Yeah.
They've not been greatly exaggerated.
No, and it's not even so much like, you know, some bad stuff happens. As you know, post-apocalypse games are like to involve, but really it's just, I appreciate the way Naughty Dog manages tension.
Okay.
And I think they are some of the best in the industry at doing that. You know, it's a very cinematic game. A lot of it kind of feels like, watching a movie, especially early on when they're kind of setting everything up and introducing the characters. You're essentially the cameraman walking along for the scene versus doing anything meaningful. But within that, they interrupt with something, you know, attacking or you know, you needing to do something urgent just often enough that you're always worried about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is no moment, no matter how tender, you know, they have some fun little just romance things early on, and it's like very cute, but I can't get the feeling out of my head that like something bad is about to happen. Like, okay, this moment is too cute. Someone's about to get attacked. Like, and you know, that it doesn't happen all the time, but it happens just enough that you're always worried about it. And that is very well managed on the part of Naughty Dog.
How much of that is expectation from having played the first game? And specifically, I mean, you know, the stuff you're talking about, specifically the DLC, which I think is, you know, supremely effective at delivering those gut punches. How much of that is based on prior knowledge, and how much of that is based on kind of this and its story beats earning it on their own merit?
Yeah, it's interesting because when you start this game, it is a post-apocalyptic town that kind of has things figured out. Like, you know, people got to do their patrols and you know, there's zombies. So clearly something bad has happened, but you start at least from a town that has their shit together.
You're in Jackson. You've gotten there and set up. Yeah.
Which you spent, you know, that was kind of the end point of the last game. Whereas, you know, in the first game, you open with the night that everything goes to shit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Specifically for Joel, but also on a larger scale. And so nothing is figured out. Everything is chaotic. And so I think, you know, someone coming just to The Last of Us 2, I bet you could count on one hand the number of people who played The Last of Us 2 without playing one.
Yeah.
It's, you know, like they're so connected.
And I mean, and it starts saying like, hey, you're going to be super locked out of this, you know, with the way that it begins, you know, with kind. Yeah. I don't want to get into specifics, but.
Yeah. You, like I said, bad things happen. Okay. All in caps. But yeah, so I could see my previous experiences definitely setting me up to expect things to go bad. And I think it's that, you know, I don't know how long you're going to keep on being nice to me before you really start tearing me apart.
Yeah.
That led to that tension, but it is just, you know, extremely well directed, extremely well crafted from a story standpoint. The way they do incidental dialogue is the best in the industry. And so I'm really appreciating that right now. In you know, the middle or in between all the segments of zombie killing.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many. So I watched you play this for like maybe an hour or so last week. Cause I think we did this on Tuesday night.
Yeah. I did. This is what I did instead of a recording when we found out we were.
Oh, nice. I'm happy you guys were able to use that time.
Yes.
So many pieces of this game though are just like top of like the setting, the art direction and everything. It's just, and the combat's so fluid. It's just like, it's a real joy to like watch as well.
Yeah. One thought is the way that they blend exploration and combat but don't. Like you're going back and forth between, hey, I need to clear the zombies out of this area, and then doing essentially personal archaeology and puzzle solving.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so far, and I remember this from the first game, Naughty Dog has kept those two things very clearly separated, and you can always tell what mode you're in.
Yeah.
Like, okay, this room is a puzzle room. I can relax for a bit. Or, okay, I just heard clickers. I'm going to have to focus on fighting. I think it's very smart of them for a game that is as intense as The Last of Us 2 is. That's a kindness to just be able to brace yourself. And I think doesn't detract at all.
Hmm.
I don't know if later on they might start blending those parts, and certainly they do switch between them in surprising ways, but I never felt confused about, am I supposed to be puzzling right now, or am I supposed to be fighting right now?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's still tension in that, like, okay, I'm in a puzzle. Oh, okay. It's shifting over to fight mode, mm-hmm. but I'm never uncertain about which mode I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not being asked to do two different things at once. Yeah, that's tricky, because if it's way too modal, you end up with something like Fear, where the action and the horror are so bifurcated,
mm-hmm.
you know, mm-hmm. when anything scary is happening, that is when you should be the least concerned for your character's yeah. safety, right? yeah, and then it ends up being if it's way too mixed up, you end up with something where, you know, you're trying to fit stuff into the right spot as things are chasing you down and hitting you. Yeah.
Yeah. The one thing that was not, I don't remember from the first game, was just how open the first kind of area I'm in is. Like, literally they just turn you loose in probably like six city blocks square. And there is some gating in terms of you need a code to get here or what have you. But I think starting with what was the Naughty Dog or the Uncharted side game that featured
Lost Legacy?
Lost Legacy. Thank you.
Yeah.
Starting with that one, I think they really got their stuff together in terms of how to do open world.
Yep. I was going to say the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah, they've continued that to the point where, you know, there's people out hunting for you in the area I was in, and I was able to sneak past all but one group of them.
Hmm.
It's funny, like the completionist in me is like, no, I gotta go explore that gas station, and I'm sure there's interesting things in there dialogue wise that I want to hear between the characters once I clear it out. But then also just the you know, playing it as the director felt right to try to stay stealthy. But I was able to, in a way that I almost expected they were going to pigeonhole me into combat at some point for each of the areas. And they totally didn't. And I think that takes a lot of confidence too, because that means, you know, people are going to miss story things or, you know, set pieces that you've put in there. Letting people truly skip those if they want to and execute it well enough is a ballsy move.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it is a good, good game. I will continue playing it when the family is not home, not just when the family is asleep, because man, do they go all out with these screaming and horrible noises in this game.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think Chris was one of the people who died when I was watching.
Yeah, that was the big meme when it first came out. It was like, oh, they give everyone names, and you'll hear people scream people's names yeah. as you're shooting them, and like, you know, so I laughed the first time I heard it. Just I think I'd been told it was coming, and so mm-hmm. that, you know, landed kind of funny instead of serious. But just in terms of like when someone gets ripped apart by a zombie, or, you know, is yeah. tortured or whatever, like they. I can't imagine what those actors had to work themselves into to scream that way. Like that is chilling.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'll either play it with headphones or play it when the family is out and about, because yeah. it is from an audio standpoint, extremely intense.
And that's like an interesting decision that they went for, is like the realism and the violence, where it's like, it, like, I remember it being very unsettling. I shot someone's arm off with like a shotgun or something, and it was just like, I don't feel good. This is bad.
Like, yeah. I did a bad.
Yeah.
I'm curious, and Ben, maybe you can clear this up for me. So the fact that every NPC is named, you know, you're probably killing hundreds of people. I'm not making the obvious joke about Naughty Dog games. I'm saying this to say, do they either avoid repeating names, or do they lean into it and have, like, somebody named Darren dies, like, ah, shit, they shot Darren, and somebody from across the way yells, oh no, which Darren's one? Dead. Oh, that's not the Darren, you know, it's my Darren over here. It's this my Darren. Oh good, I was worried. I could use some sympathy though. Like,
yeah.
Yeah,
wait, cool Darren or fuck Darren?
What was this hash code?
Actually, I will say I did feel rewarded for my stealth because I was close enough to people to hear the guards' conversation.
Okay.
And that was really good, interesting exposition that I wouldn't have gotten to if I just shot them.
Okay. Was it all meaningful? Like, oh boy, I can't believe the boss changed the code to 446.
Not from a gameplay standpoint, but from an understanding what's going on in the area standpoint. It was very, like, they were, it's actually the only place I've heard about. I think it's called Scars. So they, you know, there's the Washington Liberation Front, or Wolves, they call them, is like the main bad guys that I'm up against right now. But as I was sneaking through, they kept on talking about the Scars.
Oh, the cult.
From the perspective of, like, maybe like the WLF has kind of started as terrorists and now they're the legitimate ones, but maybe the Scars are the new terrorists, or maybe there's something wrong with the Scars. I can't quite tell, but there was just a ton of interesting seeds planted there. And then the Wolves' new leader essentially is like they're going back and forth about, like, man, I don't feel good about the way Isaac executed those people. And you actually saw the site of an execution earlier, so it was a nice little tie-in. But, like, that was right. Another person being like, no, that they had to be decisive. Like, that was a pivotal moment. That's why, you know, all these other good things happened. And so, like, I like his decisiveness. I don't, like, you're kind of getting a picture of these characters that I don't know if it's going to be a mid boss or someone that you're meeting later on, or if it's just, you know, a personality, but it plants lots of really interesting seeds.
Yeah, a very efficient way to get foreshadowing out.
Yeah, and so I wonder if it's one of those things where, like, you know, I heard the guards talking about that as I snuck past the gas station. Maybe if I'd fought everyone, I'd have found a note about Isaac in the drawer.
Yeah,
or something like that. So it's really interesting trade-offs, but I felt rewarded for my choices, and I trust the developer enough that I'm not missing something big.
Yeah.
So I think we need to all be honest with ourselves. If you call yourself Scars, you're not the good guy.
A little bit.
This is fair. I will be gobsmacked if I'm not fighting Scars at some point.
Yeah.
So the big criticism I heard for this game is that basically they explicitly force you to do things and then say you're an awful person for doing them.
That's video games.
But they didn't. I was able to
see. I mean, I know. Call of Duty makes you do awful things and then gives you bonus points. You
have a guitar riff in the background while you do them.
I mean, admittedly, I'm probably 4 or 5 hours in. But like I was able to sneak through, and it took a long time and a lot of just sitting around in the grass waiting for the path to be clear. But I did it. So I didn't feel pigeonholed into that at all. Some of the relationship story beats are on rails, but that's, you know, I think that's Naughty Dog just focusing on what parts of the story they want to tell or they feel are essential.
Yeah.
Yeah. I, you know, if they want to rub my face in being a bad person later on, I will check back in with that.
Yeah.
I will let you guys know if I feel shamed for playing the game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there might even just be, you know, story beats later on, as the dramatic arc kind of reaches a natural climaxes.
Yeah, you can already see the route that they're sending your protagonist on is a dark one. And again, I think I like playing games as the director. I don't have as much of a problem saying, oh, like, okay, she's fueled by rage and vengeance at any cost. I will play that way. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to feel bad. I can feel like the game questions her for doing that without feeling personally convicted, because I'm co-creating a really interesting experience here. So,
right.
Yeah. I guess what I'm trying to say is the people who felt bad about or didn't like that Naughty Dog was calling them a bad person are actually the worst people.
I can get down with that.
Seems legit.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. The Last of Us, I guess, not The Last of Us 2, The Last of Us Part 2, which I don't want to know how many marketing hours they spent figuring out to call it that.
Yeah.
Specifically. But it's been good so far.
Nice.
Yeah, and then last thing, I tried a game called Dreamscaper. This is also a Game Pass game, so a great source for little interesting ideas. It's essentially like a Hades / Binding of Isaac roguelike, with lots and lots of different weapons and items that you pick up as you go through various rooms, trying to delve deeper and deeper. Not a ton done that hasn't been done before, but the theming of it is really fun. So as the name suggests, you are playing through a woman's dreams. And every time she falls asleep, you kind of have the same dream and you're going through these areas and kind of Inception style, going deeper and deeper into her dreams. And then whenever you die, you kind of snap back awake. And then so that, you know, there's the dreaming world, and then there's your waking world. And the waking world is where you do upgrades and manage relationships and all of that stuff. It's nothing that hasn't been done in Hades or other games of that ilk. But the way they kind of play with it all being centered on what's going on in this woman's head is really fun. Hmm. So as you get upgrades, you do it by meditating in the park nearby. And you kind of choose what you're going to meditate on to guide your upgrades. So, you know, have a healthy mindset is increasing your health. Or, you know, increasing the window for perfect attacks is go with the flow. And it's kind of fun to see just all the ways they've connected, you know, mechanical upgrades to the theme of kind of the positive mental health, self-improvement.
Mm-hmm.
It's very charming across all those fronts. You will get inspiration in your dreams and wake up with ideas for crafts that you can make. And then you can go give those to the different people that you encounter in the world,
mm-hmm.
And strike up relationships. As you deepen your relationship with those people, they start to have an influence on you.
And they start getting into the dreams.
Exactly. I don't know if they show up in person, but they will, like, if you're under the influence of a very, like, aggressive person, you might find yourself with a boost to attack or whatever. So you can choose one person to have influence from on a given run.
So okay. Your character is the idea person?
Basically, yeah.
I hate to break it to you, you're playing the bad guy.
We'll see. She's just moved to a new city. She doesn't know anyone, and so it's kind of fun to play that from the relationship sim standpoint. You know, it feels smaller than Hades is. You know, Hades has these big stakes and literal gods politicking and maneuvering. And this is just, you know, a woman trying to find her way in a new city. Mm-hmm. And I like that. Like, it is a game that's not afraid to have low stakes. You know, you're in a dream. If you lose the boss fight, you just wake up and you try again. So yeah, very fun, and very cute. Every weapon you have in the game is, either patterned after dream logic or something from her childhood or from a memory. My favorite so far is you have a melee weapon and a ranged weapon, and your ranged weapon can be finger guns, which is exactly what you think it would be.
Right.
So I appreciated that. So that's Dreamscaper is you know, not doing anything super innovative, but it is doing it very charmingly.
Yeah. Is it generally a funny game, or is it kind of going back and forth between being funny and dramatic?
No, it's very genuine.
Okay.
Like it's you know, everything feels like reminiscing.
Yeah.
So it's very heartfelt overall in tone, which again, you know, for a game where you're effectively doing beat 'em up combat is kind of an interesting juxtaposition, but it works. They've been hinting as you get deeper and deeper in her dreams that there is, you know, maybe something that's repressed or something that she's working through. They could go super dark with that, or it could be lighthearted. I don't know.
Yeah.
Which is intriguing, you know, that's to be seen and part of what drives you to go on that next run. But yeah, overall, there's kind of moments of levity and joy, but I think it overall just feels very cozy. I think it's a cozy game, you know, very warm.
No, you know, I'm going to say this is rare because even though you've cited examples where the character is pretty well defined, I mean, Hades, people love Zagreus or whatever, but, you know, the idea of a roguelike where the character has a personality and reacts to the world in a way that is not just through through what your thumbs making them do a violence, you know, like that still feels novel. You know?
Yeah. I think, you know, like you said, there are roguelikes that have distinct characters and even very well done distinct characters, but they've all been very loud and over the top.
Yeah. Nobody would say like, hey, Returnal, that's a little bit understated for me.
Yeah. yep. Or you know, like even though Zagreus is kind of his thing, is he's like the cool kid, it is like the uber cool kid.
Yeah.
And it's all like he's the understated one of his crazy family. Mm-hmm. But even that in Hades is overstated.
Yeah.
So this game is not afraid to be small, not afraid to be quaint. And that's enjoyable to check out. I don't know how much I'll see it through.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a breath of fresh air for the time that I have spent with it.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's Dreamscaper.
Yeah.
And that's everything I got.
Cool. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I think I only have one that I want to talk about. But I played and beat Death's Door, which I don't know.
Oh yeah. Game from the
Titan. I've seen this.
I guess so.
Yeah, it's a game from the Titan Souls people. You play as a bird. It's kind of a top-down Zelda-like with more of an emphasis on action.
Yeah, it's like crude Dark Souls, but it's probably not as hard as Dark Souls. Crude Metroid-y kind of.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a very it's very simple. Like it feels like it harkens back to a lot of like older like retro games, kind of like Metroid games and kind of like Zelda games. I guess like the combat system is similar to like Hades, where it's you have really intense moments of bashing your controller for like a minute or two and then you stop and then you have to readjust your grip and be like, man, I need to chill out. But you're playing as a crow. The art style is very like cute and I guess very like well designed, I guess. Like the premise
I take issue with the level of anthropomorphic this is.
What do you mean?
So he's riding a bus in the trailer and carrying a sword on his back, but he also is like hardcore a bird and hopping around like a bird.
Yeah. It's like
he's acting anthropomorphic, but anatomically is still very bird.
This isn't really a game where you get like really attached to the character or anything. Like, I don't even know if the character has any lines of dialogue or not.
I just saw he
is ironic.
He like whips out his sword like a badass going through, you know, into a room, and then does a little like bird hoppity hop to get through the door.
If the way a bird moves doesn't make you happy, why are you questioning this dog?
Like, that is fair.
The moments of charm are like when like you're talking to a boss, like long bomb like dialogue, and the bird's just doing its bird animations of like twisting its head back and forth, you know, like seemingly like doesn't even know where they are or whatever. Mm-hmm. But no, it's a very charming game. It's pretty stripped down and pretty simplified. The premise is like, okay, there's three bosses you need to go to. You're a crow, also known as a reaper. There's this very like bureaucratic business that you work for that harvests souls. I don't know if they completely explain it until later in the end of the game. But the idea is like when someone dies, you go and harvest their soul. But there's a door that's been stuck shut on this like forbidden land that you go to. And so you're kind of sent on a mission to try and kill three things that are left alive too long in order to try and open this door. And there's kind of intrigue that comes from that. But the bulk of the game is like exploring these maybe like four or five different environments. And there's, as I said, it's like a Metroid type game. So there's a lot of kind of like signposting ahead of time where it's like, oh, there's like something I could do over here if I could somehow jump across this land, which I can't do right now. I imagine there's some sort of like Zelda-like tool that can get me there. Mm-hmm. And later on in the game, you'll probably get that, and then you can come back and explore the world more fully.
Thematically, what is with this like bureaucratic death motif? Because there's this, there's obviously Hades. There's also, at the Game Awards, they showed off Have a Nice Death.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Beetlejuice had this back in the day.
Grim Fandango.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is an interesting motif.
It's been done enough times that it's like a subgenre, mm-hmm, or something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm not sure what their rationale was for going with this as their backdrop, but it works though. So you kind of have a hub world. They have kind of like a limited like upgrade system, but it's pretty satisfying where like every person you kill gives you like one or two XP. You spend the XP to level up one of four things. And I think the four different things are like strength, dexterity, speed, and magic, I think, are like basically the four things in a nutshell. But it's a little bit clunky because each one of those things do like two or three things. And then they each have increasing costs. So it's like 200 for the first upgrade, then 400, then 600, 800, whatever.
Yeah.
So if you just play the game proper, you'll probably get like halfway through the upgrade system. But anyway, the bosses are pretty like well animated and have some intrigue to them. They're not, I mean, you know, they're as good as like a pretty decent like Zelda type boss from like back in the day, I would say.
Yeah.
So it's like pretty good.
This is something the studio excelled at in the past. I mean, Titan Souls was basically like a Shadow of the Colossus style boss run with really good boss design kind of things.
Okay. Yeah. So the only like, and maybe this is just kind of the genre. It's kind of similar to maybe two, I guess, in terms of the combat pacing.
To what, I'm sorry?
To Hollow Knight in terms of the combat pacing.
Okay.
Where the boss battles are ones where it's, you basically die, load from the beginning, die, load from the beginning for like a half an hour until you memorize the moveset down cold. And you like, no, okay, I'm going to do this attack when I open up, then I'm going to do this attack, then I'm going to dodge this attack theirs. So I don't know how rewarding of a gameplay that is for people. I know for me, it's like, it's okay, but it kind of feels a little hollow because it's like, all right, I'm going to commit 30 minutes to building up the skill that I'm going to forget 15 minutes later. The bosses themselves, some of the design on the bosses, as far as like setting that they're in, are like gorgeous and are really like heads and shoulders above the rest in terms of art style. Other than that, there's a lot of like Easter eggs in the game. It does a lot to reward you for exploring like the different corners of the map. I think the other sort of thing that they do to try and leave breadcrumbs is there's like Easter eggs that you can find where it'll give you eventually an upgrade to your health or an upgrade to your magic. For every four that you find, it'll upgrade one of those. And I think there's eight of each in the entire game.
Okay.
Are these literally eggs?
No, they're not. They're like shrines that you pray at, I think. Oh. And I guess they're bird shrines now that I think about it. So it's like you're praying to your bird god. I think you start with like three, it's either three or four health and three or four magic. you get magic by just hitting anything. So one of the ways they control this is they just have a bunch of constructible or like boxes and stuff littered around the game, or equivalents of that, like a skeleton head or something like that, or a vase or something like that, as a way to guarantee that you have magic, because magics are can be like your special ability. So it might be like your Zelda weapon or something like that. Like there's literally like a hookshot in this game eventually. Spoiler alert. But it has that type of thing. Each of the weapons you kind of get in each of the dungeons, and each of that will unlock new things in all the different worlds that you've been in. So there's plenty to explore even after you finish the game. But I think I'm kind of calling it after finishing the game proper. I don't mind like finishing the rest of the world or going in to look at it, but it's similar to Arkham, the Arkham games, and that the more you complete things, the more and more empty the world becomes, you know?
There's
like that feeling in Batman after you've gotten all the Riddler, like this is a barren wasteland of no content because I've completely mined it. So I don't want to go down that same route with this game, but I'm definitely happy with the amount of time I played it and beat it. And it's, and that's like maybe another compliment to it, is it's not like a game that like wears out its welcome. It's like cute and fun, and it is like sufficiently challenging, like the boss battles, but you can be done with it and like feel fine with that. Yeah. I think I sunk 10 hours into it, 10.8 hours.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, so if you like kind of like something like an isometric Hollow Knight, maybe that is pretty akin to what this is.
Mm-hmm.
Something along that. Cute isometric Hollow Knight, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any questions about Death's Door?
No. All of the things that you're describing sound cool to me.
Mm-hmm. Can you eat bird food?
Bird food? There's no. You eat a stew in the game that's made by a clearly dead fisherman that's being controlled by an octopus.
Okay. Being puppeteered by it?
Yeah.
Nice.
Which is kind of charming.
Yeah.
I do have one other small game to talk about, I guess. I did play some Valheim this week, which is in these current times, it seems like an old game. Like only a year or two old.
Mm-hmm.
But one of my friends back from Cincinnati suggested playing it with our group of friends. So I've only played it for maybe like 3 or 4 hours. But I actually kind of got past the learning curve of like how to actually play the game.
Oh, that's good.
So yeah, it seems like that's kind of a big thing. Cause like when you start the game, you're just kind of dropped in the world and it's like, go have fun. Mm-hmm. But you're like, I don't know what I'm doing. And so like you walk in a direction and die and be like, that kind of sucks. But basically, like, you can knock down small trees, you can start building things in particular ways where you can build, like, bigger weapons like spears and axes that you can chop down trees with. Again, they don't do a lot to convey it, so you kind of either have to look at a wiki or, like, really, like, think about, like, what it's saying to try and figure out how to do it. Like, you need to build a workbench first, and then that needs to be covered for some reason, so you need to build a house around that. And then that allows you to build like the base kind of like set of items that you can build, which include things like chests and beds that you can store things in and go to sleep and get rested in. And then you can start building other like types of benches, add-ons that basically allow you to upgrade all the tools that you have and allow you to explore the map more. And so I was able to build a base. I was able to start exploring. I found they have like dungeons in the game that you can go into and kind of clear out, maybe similar to Skyrim, but in their own art style. Mm-hmm. And then that gives you like more kind of tech and more resources that you wouldn't get otherwise that can start unlocking the other like crafting type stuff that you do later in the game.
Yeah.
The game is really like beautiful. The art style is really, really nice, especially for being a procedurally generated game. I found myself constantly kind of being in awe of that.
Mm-hmm.
They have like a day-night cycle, but during the day when the sun hits you right or whatever, it's just this like beautiful amber color, and it's like very like whimsical or fantasy like. And but like the way like it's so much better, like it'll render like the base you build, and like when you're walking to it from far away, you're like, oh, there's that house. It looks like gorgeous on the landscape or whatever. compared to like Subnautica, where it like snaps in the base really clunkily from like a mile away.
It's lit Legos in a bathtub. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, there's my jank base on the ocean floor.
there are my shit tubes.
Yeah. So I mean, that part's kind of like a really positive experience. The how you eat food and how that gives you buffs and stuff. Again, it's not something that's like necessarily clearly laid out for you, but once you kind of fiddle around with it, you get it. Yeah, I don't know. It was a very pleasant experience to play.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I might play some more of that in the future if we can get enough people to play it. But yeah. It was fun.
Nice.
That's all I got.
Is this the first time you've played this?
I played it for I don't know how many hours. Two, and bounced off of it when it first came out.
Yeah, so it didn't feel like there was a lot of game there when it first came out.
Yeah.
Yeah, most of what I remember hearing was copper transportation problems.
So this is like a Factorio.
ways to get resources that you find back to safety was a concern based on, I believe, Dennis's stories.
Yes, my sailing shenanigans.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're at the ocean floor.
Yep.
Nice. Well, Valheim. Going strong still. Let's.
What do you got, Cole?
Yeah, I'm gonna do mine quick, just because we're going a little long, and I haven't done an awful lot. These are things that I streamed. I'm not gonna talk about State of Decay 2 because that's a game that I am currently streaming. Game owns. It's real. Mm-hmm. It's real good. The two.
Have you played that before?
No. I had played State of Decay 1, and we just did State of Decay 1 for WoW, and I still had a hankering for some of what that series could do. Never played State of Decay 2, so I just wanted to roll right into it.
Sure. Heartland is also worth a check out once you've beaten the main storyline.
I'm real curious about it. Yeah. Other things. So before that, I streamed two small indie games. One extremely indie, in fact, so indie that it was made during a game jam. This is a game called Lovecrafting. It is
so cool.
What's that?
That is so cool.
So you've seen this?
I watched your stream.
Oh, cool. Yeah, you were there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you did pop in.
Yeah.
No. I mean, it's an incredibly modest product, and I think that it is something where, I think I said this in the stream or whatever. It's more fun to like to play than it is to finish. You know, because there's a kind of collection kind of deal. I also don't want to describe too much of how it works, because I think that is how that is a great deal of the joy of playing it, because it communicates very little to you, and understanding what matters and what doesn't and what it is trying to signal to you. Basically learning how to read it is a real important kind of thing. So the idea is, you are a cultist, you are performing a ritual on a windswept cliffside, trying to bring into being one of the, I think, 10 elder gods or whatever. None of them are like actual named Lovecraft mythos, but they're in the style, right? To do this, it's basically like a card game almost kind of thing. You are given a draw of three cards, and each of the cards that you pick will impact a meter relating to one of the one of the potential gods kind of body parts or systems. And as you do more draws, it kind of builds it out a little bit more. So you start out with just the heart, and then it goes to the heart and the lungs, then it's the heart, the lungs, and the stomach, and then it's the skeleton, kind of working up like that until you're trying to manage like three or four different meters, moving them either to the left or to the right based on which cards you draw, or expanding or contracting the kind of like safe zone inside of a particular meter. And at certain points, you are drawing aspect cards. These are like tarot cards, but made to be more specifically about, you know, Eldric being kind of things. So you're doing this, and this is meant to be played, you know, each round probably takes like 5-7 minutes, something like that, if you get to the end. And if your choices that you made as this went on end up being the correct ones to make a god, you get a god and it fills out in your little book. If you don't, then it turns into just a regular kind of just a beast, you know, an unnameable beast from beyond that you then contain, and you gotta start again. And like I said, I don't want to go into too much detail about like what it is you're actually managing, but it is very high stress, because the first half of the draws to making your god are not timed. So you're given all the chance in the world to look at it and see, okay, like here's the effect that this is going to have, and this is going to put me in a bad position if I get an unfavorable draw on the next one, right? After the first half, then you start getting a time limit and that can really work against you on like the overall like health of the ritual. So, you know, and the cards also get more complicated and affect more meters as they go along. So you are trying to make intentional choices, but then as the conveyor belt speeds up and more chocolates start coming down it, you end up kind of scrambling, and that's where you start making mistakes and can botch things. Right.
Truly, chocolate is the original elder evil.
Mm. And
so
good.
Is there any way to like extend the amount of time that you have in one mode or another, or is it always a fixed point that you transition over?
It's always a fixed point that you transition over. So like,
gotcha.
Part of my strategy ultimately became, I want to get into a good position, so no one mistake will like undo me. That doesn't stop it from getting out of control very quickly. You know, it's like that. That's part of the fun is rolling with it and squeaking out of victory, right?
Nice.
Yeah. So it's cool. I would recommend trying it out. I wouldn't recommend trying to fill out the fill out your little bestiary that you have, the Necronomicon or whatever, just because it relies a little bit too much on luck. And also, you know, because it relies on luck, those last few are going to be pretty hard to get. You end up reaching peak god. So that is Lovecrafting. Do you guys have any questions about Lovecrafting?
Do you think that they made the game because they had the name first?
Oh yes, and that's and that is an ethos that I respect greatly. It's like, yeah. Well, we came up with the pun. We're basically obligated to do it now. So,
yeah. Oh yeah, people don't realize we actually come up with the title to each episode first, and then have to come up with banter to fit it.
Yeah, that's true. It's like it's like writing a mystery story. You start at the end and you work backwards. You know. But that's available.
The hard part is all we have to work in all the suggestions for the title.
Yeah,
that's the part where it gets really tricky.
But you know, no, it's easy things are generally not worth doing. You know,
that's true.
That's totally not true. So many,
but like
so many easy things like are I worth said, doing. Guys,
yeah, Spadoink. Sorry, I phoned that one in.
Yeah, no, we're kind of getting close. Yeah. that has been Lovecrafting. It's available on Itch for free. Like I said, it was just a jam game. I think it was made for Ludum Dare or Ludum Dare or Ludum Dare, however you like to pronounce it. And I also played a game called Tattletale. I thought it was I thought it was okay. This is a first person horror game. You play as a little kid. It takes place in 1998. You go to open your Christmas gift early, and it's a Furby, or this universe's version of a Furby, which is a little horrifying gremlin who screams very loud, and things go downhill from there as you are trying to avoid the mama tattletale.
Oh, no.
Who is out to get you. and also like managing the thing's meters. So like taking care of it, you're feeding it, brushing it, and making sure it stays charged. Also making sure it stays in the light, or else it starts like crying and screaming, thus bringing death down upon you. It's short. It's, you know, again, a pretty modest product. It's made by one of the people on the Arcane Kids team. So the people who did like the, oh gosh, Bubsy 3D at the James Turrell exhibit at the Museum of Modern Art, like joke games, the Sonic Dreams collection. If you know, you know. So this has a little bit of that kind of like meta and being, you know, kind of provocative energy. It falls into a little bit of the trap that games designed for streamers end up falling into. Things like Bendy and the Ink Machine, or Hello Neighbor, or Helltown, any number of things where like we're going to escalate the difficulty like a lot toward the end as you go and look for the six or seven different doodads, you know, your Slender, the pages or whatever, because like, you know, this is, we need to give the streamer an awful lot of opportunities to fail and yell very loudly, because that's what the kids like, you know. So I didn't like that particular aspect of it, but like the stuff that ended up leading to it was pretty good.
So I watched some Let's Plays of this, and my big complaint with this compared to like Five Nights at Freddy's is it didn't seem like there was ever any real justification for why these things are trying to kill you, or
why the mama specifically is trying to kill you.
Say again?
Why the mama specifically is trying to kill you.
Right. And like, I'm not even talking about like the weird, like, you know, Five Nights at Freddy's advanced lore, but like, even just like, okay, evil animatronics, like, yeah, that kind of tracks versus like slightly larger, angrier Furby.
I feel like that is a very close relative to evil animatronics.
Yeah.
I think murdering Furbies makes perfect sense.
I mean, maybe if it was a long Furby, those are creepy.
The expansion actually goes a great deal toward explaining why the mama acts the way that it does.
Okay.
The individual tattletales, you know, they wish you no harm. They only inadvertently get you killed by bringing the mama down. The expansion, which is free, like I didn't even realize I had it. You know, I didn't consciously buy it. It was just an update that was added. Gives a little bit of motivation for the mama.
Hmm.
Yeah. Cool.
Very cool.
Any questions about Tattletale? That is tail spelled like the back end of a cat. T-A-I-L.
Not for me.
Okie doke. We need to get to the other segments because we are running along.
Starting earlier does not make us go faster, apparently.
Oops.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. The little administrative stuff. We had put out a free play call because we forgot that we had a dangling response from last week.
Week is a long time to remember something.
It is, and I appreciate you being on the ball posting a new one. Thank you, David. Dennis.
I mean, I'll take credit.
A week is a long time to remember a name.
It is, yeah. Let alone 17 years or something like that. Anyway,
okay, have we known each other longer than not at this point?
2006, I was 18. We will have known each other longer than not when I am 36.
Okay, getting close.
Yeah.
Soon.
Damn.
Yep.
Crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people, and also reassure everybody that we will do the free play at a later time?
Yes. Thank you, everyone who responded to the free play. You'll hear that next week. The question from last week that we are doing this week, Breakfast for Dinner, is what game is most criminally overlooked? Not necessarily underrated or anything like that, but it needs to be discovered by more people.
Mm-hmm.
There we go.
Yeah. And I'll get us started here with Jeremy, who writes Death's Door, apropos to this episode. It's a new game that came out last summer, and oh my God, it's so good. Please, anybody that that likes the old Zelda style gameplay. It should please anybody who likes the old Zelda style gameplay. Isometric fighting that keeps evolving, lots of puzzles, good story, and beautiful world. The only bad thing about it is that it is too short.
Yeah. There you go.
There you go. Spreading the word.
Predictive right there.
David, what does Jeff say?
Jeff says, Mischief Makers, a unique N64 game with very unique movement systems and developer program speedrunning tech. Basically Ooh. Kept alive by a handful of runners at AGDQs.
AGDQs, yeah. Mischief Makers is a treasure game for the N64, and it has not been like done on virtual consoles, from what I understand, at least here in America. And the last time that we tried to run it, somebody requested it for WAF, and we just couldn't get the dang thing to run. And the carts are quite costly right now, so we had to decline. This was a while ago, though, so maybe emulators have caught up to it.
Let's see, or you can catch it at AGDQ.
Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does David say?
David says, with the caveat that I only heard about this game from DuckFeed, Death's Gambit is pretty damn good, and not many people seem to have heard of it, and that's a shame.
Yeah, that one is mostly talked about in like deep corners of people who are in Souls-like stuff.
Nice.
Yeah, and that'll be similar to my answer.
It is funny, yeah, popular within its genre can still be very niche overall.
Yes.
Wasn't Death's Gambit, though, a Adult Swim game?
I can't recall who published it. It was either Adult Swim or it was Devolver. I'm not sure.
Just because I would have expected, you know, that level of, you know, marketing, whatever, and, you know, love to have, you know, meant more.
Yeah. No, it was published by a company called Serenity Forge. You might be thinking of Eider, possibly.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah. Let's see. Dennis, what does Greg say?
Yeah, Greg says Star Control 2, a.k.a. the Urquan Masters. Cole and Gary know what a great time this is, as they have covered it on WAF, but everybody else seems to have missed this awesome early 90s computer game. I think it's so good, I put it in my top 5 favorite games, period. Wow. And yet hardly anyone has played it. My friends refuse to try it because it's such an old game. Whippersnappers. Yeah.
The thing about Star Control 2 is you can set the combat to auto-resolve. I think the combat on that is actually really good and fun. If it's too antiquated to your taste and you want to play it like an adventure game where you're doing some like resource management to try and fund your operation, then that is absolutely possible. And I would say anybody who enjoys Mass Effect would love Star Control. It feels way more modern than you would expect it to.
Nice.
Yeah. And also it's pretty easy to get a hold of, like do a search for the Urquan Masters, URQUAN. And there's like an executable that will run on a modern Windows system that is a port of the, Neo Geo something 64, version of this. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's see. Corbin says, I have two. First is The Procession to Calvary. It's a really fun. Is it Procession to Calvary or Calvary? Because people always get
cavalry,
this.
Calvary, like the horses, I believe.
So unless he spelled it wrong, in which case, really, there's no way to know.
It is so funny.
Schrodinger's Cavalry.
It is so funny because people like consistently get those mixed up to the point where I feel like Corbin is specifically doing this to get under my skin. I don't think you're doing that, Corbin. No.
Google has corrected me to Calvary.
Yeah. So when people say, "Oh, the Calvary has arrived," and I'm like, "Dog, the place where Christ died." You know,
Cole, you're really chomping at the bit to complain about this.
You know, I should have had
that's a callback.
I should have had some. I should have had less espresso. Sorry, I should have I should have had fewer espresso. Sorry, people will say like, "Oh, you know, we're waiting for the Calvary to arrive," and here we've like when it is actually about Calvary, we say cavalry. Fuck, I said this was supposed to go quick. The first is The Procession to Calvary, a really funny point-and-click adventure game with Monty Python cutout animation of Renaissance art. The second is actually an old game, Def Jam Fight for New York. If you can get over that game's pretty good. If you can get over the ridiculous story and the very 2000s hip hop presentation, it's one of the best arcade brawling fighting games of all time. That's a good game. Henry Rollins teaches you some of your martial arts moves. He's like one of the instructors.
I mean, basically, if you could imagine the Super Bowl halftime show as a cage match.
Yeah.
Basically, that's what you got.
Yeah, I just remember that is a game that, you know, properly loves martial arts as much as I do.
Yeah.
This I'm looking at screenshots of Procession to Calvary.
There you go. Really? Yeah.
And it's in the vein of Cuphead, which we talked about last recording, where it's just like the art style is so distinct, it will never look bad. It's perfectly executed.
Are we sure the game isn't set in Canada? This could be Procession to Calgary.
Oh, man. let's see. David, what does Sean say?
Sean says, a small indie game called Rise, a Simple Story, which I've mentioned before on a previous multiplayer. It's such a beautifully told story and hit me right in the feels and comes highly recommended.
Nice. Plays a little dude.
I have that on my wish list on Steam, so I've heard of it, but yeah.
Hmm. Another one thrown on the pro in the pro column. Let's see, Ben, what does Callum say?
Callum says harebrained schemes Battletech. Seems that only really people who are already franchise are into it.
Who are already what? I'm sorry?
Already fans of the franchise are into it. It's a really good tactical turn based strategy game with mech customization and some amazing mods.
Yeah. Harebrained Schemes is the company that did the really good Shadowrun strategy games, and based on those alone, I have constantly had Battletech on kind of a list in the back of my mind since it came out.
Like to imagine that this is a game made by Harebrained Schemes. This is actually a variant of Battletech where you only carry out harebrained schemes.
Oh yeah, and your mech pilot is Wile E. Coyote.
Yep.
I like that there's a rating at the end of every level of how much that shouldn't have worked.
The improbability factor. And finally, Dennis, what does Noah say?
Noah says, Crossout. It's a free-to-play game that is vehicular combat in a Mad Max-type setting. Hmm. The best part is you build your vehicle piece by piece and can make some really unique, creative, and wacky vehicles.
Sounds like Auto Assault.
Yeah, this name sounds
sad.
Hmm.
Every once in a long while at like 3 a.m., if I've been up late, really late playing, I will just browse on over to the free to play section of the PlayStation Store.
Gotcha.
Because I think I've seen this game there.
That makes sense.
So you just took me back to a fever dream of 3 a.m. years ago.
Nice. Let's do ours. I can knock mine out real quick. Grime. I talked about that last year. We covered it on Bonfire Side Chat. It is a very good, unique Souls-like 2D platformer. It's 3D and it has an amazing surreal art style. I wish more people had played it. It didn't show up on any of the Game of the Year lists that I read of any size, really. I think that I am the only person who that I'm aware of who put it as like their favorite game of 2021. So fuck me, I guess. But I wish more people would check it out. I'm an evangelist for that game, and I hope that it succeeds when it comes to console. When more people are able to access it, because I want that, team to succeed so they can make more cool stuff.
Nice.
Yeah. David, how about you?
Man, this is a tough one. There's a lot of games I wish less people knew about. you know, probably the most obvious ones being Stanley Parable and The Binding of Isaac.
Okay.
Shots fired.
Can I give you a positive example that I know you'll agree with, just based on your history? Imagination.
Yes, good point. Although I don't know. I feel like that's my monkey's paw game.
Right. Didn't they do a free to play kind of like follow up and it was bad? Yeah.
Yeah, like I always wanted a sequel and I got it, and you know, I spent so much time asking if I could get a sequel that I never stopped to think whether I should get a sequel.
Yeah, I'm not sure why you should have thought of that.
Cash grabs find a way. So I'm going to follow in the footsteps of David and give a semi-trolly answer, but I'm going to say that the most overlooked game that people have actually played is The Witness.
Mm-hmm.
And Cole, if you have a better suggestion, then I'm willing to take it as well.
Yeah, did it just fall out of the conversation a little bit too quick for you?
It's usually like there's like a lot to the, like, I've talk to people who've played the game but haven't actually got to the end of it, and right. So that's like especially frustrating.
I actually crapped out on one of the last puzzles, I think.
Yeah,
in the challenge or before the credits?
Yeah, so there's the challenge and there's like a reward from that, and then there's like one other video that I think is important to watch.
No, I crapped out, I think, before I saw credits.
Okay,
fair. But also sad.
I spent too many sessions on a single puzzle, just trying everything I could think of, getting really weird and out there, and then starting all over with basic stuff. And eventually burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rigorous game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see here. And Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I think mine I can say with confidence, because now the window to discover it has passed. Unfortunately, Atlas Reactor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, did they take that down?
Yeah, it's officially shut down now. I think you can play the servers are shut down and they're not putting out new content. But it was the essentially simultaneous turn-based MOBA.
Mm-hmm.
It just really, really cool ideas, really fun interactions to play with. It was just a little too out there, I think, to ever take hold.
Yeah. Oh, it's a bummer.
Yeah, one of the few free-to-play games that I invested money in. So, of course, it went away.
But that and the cycle, man.
Yeah, I tell you what though, I am in both of those instances. It's one of those things where I feel like I'm happy to give the money to reward you for something that I like versus feeling like I need to get my worth out of the money.
I mean,
you
put a good amount of time into both of those, so it's hard to look at that and see like, oh, you didn't get value out of it.
Yeah. The cycle is still out there. It's just been changed so much as to be unrecognizable. So
yeah.
can't comment on it.
It's not dead, but it's dead to you.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, man. Well, thank you, everybody, for responding to that. We'll get to the free play next time, most likely, or at some point in the future. If you would like to participate in these in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you, Dennis, for posting both of them. So we're going to do something rare. We're going to go right to the end of the episode just because we have gone long. We decided to spend our time this episode talking about the games we have played because it had been a couple of weeks. So the end boss will not be happening this time. So thank you so much for listening to level number 403. If you'd like to help us out, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. You can like us on facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. You can rate or review on iTunes or your podcast directory of choice. And of course, come back next week. Is there anything huge I'm forgetting?
We were a week away from the episode 404 not being found for the user.
True.
That would have been good.
We got to work on our trolling game.
We do.
Except we're very good at trolling ourselves by telling ourselves we'll go fast and then going very slow.
Yeah, yeah. It's the one way to guarantee a long one. So I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me in the club.
I am the podcaster formerly known as David Mysmith. I'm still known as David Mysmith, but I was also known as David Mysmith formerly.
Consistency.
Yeah.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
All right, who has titles?
Oh, do I have titles?
Yeah, I've got... So I have... He cannot be held accountable for this. Still very bird.
Okay.
My jank base on the ocean floor. Spadoink. And a week is a long time.
Okay, is a long time. Hey, autocorrect. I didn't say my bank base on the ocean floor. I said my jank base. Way to be janky, autocorrect. Dennis, what you got?
I've got four. I've got RLDK mode.
Okay.
I've got par combat.
That's
PARKOMBAT.
Okay.
My personal favorite, I've got, you're a real deep sleeper.
Sorry, I forgot that I'd said that. All right.
And then finally, triangulate the draw.
Okay. Ben, you got anything?
I also have RLDK mood. I also have Spadoink, even though I don't know how you're going to work it into the episode. That might be a hard one.
Yeah. And
I have It's Not Dead, But It's Dead to You.
Okay.
So I feel like we've kind of have to go. Oh, sorry.
Wait, it's Cole.
Yeah.
I have finished this in one. Talking about a person begging you to kill them on the street.
As you do.
When you say it like that.
and then I have fewer espresso.
Oh yeah, I had written that down as well.
Okay.
So I feel like you're a very deep sleeper is
Yeah, you're a real deep sleeper.
Yeah. Okay. Is anybody opposed to that?
Mm-mm.
Okay. All right.
How could you be? You're asleep.
Wake up. We just want you to wake up. We're all here waiting for you to wake up.
So we hit punchy right at the end.
Yep. All right, you guys. I got to go.
Sleep well. See you guys around. All right.
Take care, everybody. Have a good week. Bye. Mm-hmm.